Welcome to NHL Draft Class. We are here live at the NHL Scouting Combine. I am Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morial. Mike, center of the hockey universe for a week here. We've got all the prospects for the 2026 draft. Almost all of the GMs are here. All the scouts are here. It's a fantastic week.
It certainly is. It's been a lot of cups of coffee, Adam, to get us through this, right? But it's a lot of excitement. Scouts are walking through. GMs are walking through here at KeyBank Center on the suite levels, the prospects. They have those chairs in front of all the suite rooms where the teams happen to be stationed. So, you know, everyone's really looking forward to talking to the GMs and scouts. A lot of excitement here at KeyBank Center. And we're looking forward to, you know, talking with a lot of these prospects as well as, you know, while we're here.
Yeah, 90 of the top prospects for the 2026 draft are here. You know, guys are going to go in the first round. Franchises are going to be changed. And this is sort of the big stepping stone for where that could happen. You know, the GMs are going to meet guys that they're going to take and potentially build their franchises around. There's a lot of pressure surrounding this week, players and teams, but, you know, we got to catch up with a few of them, one of them being Gavin McKenna.
Yep, we did. And Gavin McKenna and Ivar Stenberg from Frölunda. So two big prospects that obviously a lot of people expect them to go 1-2. If not 1-2, then somewhere in that top three, top four range.
So we got to sit down with Ivar Stenberg. You'll hear from him in a little bit. But Gavin McKenna, just the ups and the downs sort of through the year. And we talked about the McKenna Project documentary with him. And him, Gavin himself talked about it. But he had a fantastic year, especially the second half of his season. Wonderful run at the World Juniors. Second leading scorer in the tournament. Comes back, 51 points in 35 games. Tied for fifth in scoring among all NCAA players. He's a top 10 candidate for the Hobey Baker Award. I would have to think he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. He's certainly projected to go number one. I don't know if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, I don't know how you go past him.
I don't know how you go past him, but, you know, obviously he's a player that everyone respects. He's been making his rounds here. Seems like he's been very humble in the interviewing process. So it's going to be interesting to see if Toronto is going to make that pick. Will it be McKenna? We think it will be. So without further ado, let's get to our conversation with the Wizard of Whitehorse, Gavin McKenna.
Gavin, let's talk about second half of your season. You went to World Juniors, and you had a great tournament there. How did that sort of help you moving forward into the second half of your season at Penn State?
Yeah, I think it was just an all confidence thing, getting to play with those high-end players again and, you know, play with the puck a little bit more and a little bit more skill. I think it was a big confidence booster. So going into the second half, I kind of figured out the college hockey game and the style. And, you know, I think first half, Aiden Fink, my line mate, was injured. So start of the year, I was playing with new line pretty much every weekend. So once he got back the second half, we got comfortable with each other. And, yeah, just things started going our way.
What was the biggest adjustment you had to make, Gavin, you know, as the sixth youngest player entering college hockey, coming over from major junior?
Yeah, I think just the style of hockey is a little bit different. In junior, I think there's a little bit more skill. And in college, it's more of a straightforward game. It's heavier, it's faster, it's quicker. So, you know, the defensemen play you harder, so it's harder to create. And, you know, I kind of had to find different ways to put up numbers and stuff. And, you know, getting inside a little bit more. And yeah, the guys are bigger, so it's harder to get to those areas. But I think once I figured it out, that's when I started producing.
So as you're going through the season, what we didn't really all know until the end of it was you had a camera crew following you for the McKenna Project, which is an outstanding documentary. Mm-hmm. I watched it the night it premiered on TNT. But how was that, just having cameras? Like, it's a huge life adjustment already going to college. How was it having cameras following you all season long?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, honestly. They were kind of just like flies on the wall. They were pretty good about it. So, you know, I obviously knew they were there and had to watch what I was saying when I was mic'd up. But, no, it was good. Like, it was fun. I'm really happy with how the documentary turned out. It kind of shows the, you know, the struggles and stuff that us young guys go through with all the social media and stuff like that. But, yeah, it was fun to kind of see that. And I'll always be able to rewatch my year, so.
I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that stood out to me, and I talked to Matt, the director, was the way that was sort of played into it, how the comments, you know, from the general public were, he's this or he's that. How did you sort of handle the negativity and just not kind of, as best you could, not let it bother you?
Yeah, for sure. I know the first half, you know, I was every single game. I was, you know, worried about putting up points and worried about, you know, all this talk and stuff. But I think once I got to World Juniors, that's kind of, like I said, when I got my confidence back. And I really started to, you know, kind of get sick of hearing that stuff and just kind of turned it into fuel. I started working harder on and off the ice. And then with that, just gave me confidence. So hearing that stuff was honestly probably a bit of a blessing in disguise. So it fueled me, and you know, it's something I've, you know, kind of gone through, and I think it'll help me learn it at a young age. So
I've been told as a kid you used to bring toques and gloves and pucks into bed bed with you. At what point did your family kind of say to themselves, this hockey thing is getting a little out of hand?
Well, yeah, when I was young, I was obsessed with the sport. My dad built me a backyard rink, and it's kind of where I learned how to skate and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was always, you know, watching hockey on YouTube or someone involved with hockey. Yeah, they found out at a young age. You know, I played up a year my whole life. So, you know, but once I turned 12, that was kind of when they realized, you know, something could happen here and I got to get out of Whitehorse and find some competition. So, yeah, I moved away at a young age, and since then it's been a fun ride.
And your dad, Willie, told me the story of, you know, when they were looking for homes in Whitehorse, he needed flat land to build that rink in the backyard for you. Talk a little bit about that, the memories of that, him building the rink, and the hours that you and dad used to spend out there, and the family.
Yeah. No, well, he would, he'd spend close to 50 hours every year building me a backyard rink, so a lot of time and effort went into that, and I'd always try and repay him by spending more hours out there. So me and him spent a lot of hours out there. You know, we'd usually start with doing some drills with each other, and it always just turned into one-on-one by the end of it. He'd always be on defense. I would never play defense. So, yeah, those are some of the best memories of my life. And, you know, I'm glad I got some videos of it because I can look back and experience that. But yeah, those memories are pretty special.
So speaking of family, one of the guys who stood out to me in the documentary was your grandfather, Joe. Mm-hmm. The influence, and you spoke of this in the show, the influence he had on you just because of who he is and because of what he went through with some of the residential schools. What were some of the things that you've learned from him, and how have you bonded with him, and what kind of an influence is he on you?
Yeah, he's a huge influence. You know, he's gone through so much in his life, so to see how far he's gotten and, you know, see how much of a great guy he is. He does so much for our family, and, you know, with what he went through, it's pretty sad. I know there's more stories that he told that weren't in there, but he's gone through so much in his life and dealt with so much. So for me, I use that as a huge motivator, and I know if something's going on in my life, like I'm getting, you know, flamed on Twitter or whatever it is, it's nothing compared to what he had to go through and the way he had to survive. So I try not to take anything for granted and just always remember that I got the family, you know, behind me, and use that as motivation.
And some of those were stories no one in the family had ever heard before. Yeah. Like, he had never told those on camera or off. Was there anyone that sort of resonated with you more than another that he talked about?
Yeah, well, we had never heard any of those stories, not even his wife. So it was pretty pretty touching to hear some of those stories, and obviously super sad. And but yeah, one story that always has stuck with me was, when he was a young kid, he was left, he was on a school trip and was left out in the mountains to pretty much just survive. And, you know, he wasn't worth the gas money of getting flown back into town. So he had to survive on his own out there for 3 or 4 days. And I just can't even imagine what that was like at such a young age. So he's gone through a lot, and I'm obviously very grateful for what he's done for me and how big of a motivator he's been for me.
Yeah, how big of a motivating factor was that? I mean, you just need to think of him during the times when it was kind of tough, right, Gavin, at Penn State. So you think of your grandfather. I mean, were you able to talk to him over the phone too? And obviously I know family means a lot to you, but to be able to talk to him on the phone and, you know, maybe get some advice or insight, it just makes things a little more clearer for you.
Yeah, for sure. He doesn't have a phone, so I always got to call my grandma, and he always chops in there. And but yeah, I know that you know, whenever I get a chance to speak with my family, if stuff's going, you know, not great, that they'll always flip it around and they'll always put a smile on my face. So I learned this year that it was it's pretty huge how big my family is for me, and they helped me through a lot this year, and they've done it my whole life. So,
and with all the hype surrounding your offensive talent, what part of your game do you feel gets kind of overlooked?
Yeah, I think a pretty big detail is my stick details. I think I'm pretty good at stripping the puck off players and being able to read the play before it happens. So I think that gets a little underlooked, and I think it's just because of my brain. I think I'm a smart hockey player who can read the play and kind of read things before they happen. So
we're almost a year past from when you decide to go to Penn State. Where are you a better player, better person, just all around now than you were a year ago?
Yeah, I think I've just matured in many ways on and off the ice. You know, I got to live by myself and kind of learn how to cook meals and, you know, do all these little things that you got to do as an adult. So learned that. And then on the ice, obviously just playing against older guys, stronger guys, I think you kind of figure out what you got to do and how to get to those dirty areas and find ways to produce. So I think obviously that's what I wanted going to college, is to mature and really learn a lot before I make that next jump. And I think college did that for me.
You grew up, I know, loving Patrick Kane and his ability on the ice. What parts of his game maybe influenced you the most?
I think just his creativity. You know, I always watch his stuff on YouTube. You know, you see his spinorama goals and all these amazing plays that he does. And I just kind of, you know, I'd go out into my backyard rink and try those things. You know, I put a bunch of pucks out and stick handle through them like he did. And just his creativity, his smoothness. Obviously, his brain, you can't really be taught a brain, but I think when I was watching all those highlights, I kind of learned the game a little bit and kind of figured it out.
So we're here at the NHL Scouting Combine. Obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs have the number one pick. Have you met with the Maple Leafs?
Yeah. Chyka, he ended up coming up to Whitehorse, so I got to meet with him and had a really good conversation with him. And yeah, I think they've got their combine after this, so go meet with them there, and we'll see where things go.
So obviously the question is, you want to go number one, I'm sure, but if they ask you, why should we take you with the number one pick, what is your answer to John Chyka and the Leaf staff?
Well, I believe in myself. I believe in my abilities. I believe that what I did this year going to college, I think it has prepared me very well for this upcoming year. And, you know, I think in hockey, the biggest thing is having a brain. You look at all those top players like Crosby, McDavid, they're all the smartest players in the game. And I think there's obviously some very smart players in this class, but I believe I'm at the top for it. And, yeah, like I said, I just believe in myself. I believe what I can do. And whether I'm one or whether I'm not, I think hopefully I can have a good career.
I'm curious, what do you think NHL teams should know about your defensive game and your compete, which is high level?
Yeah, I think I'm a hungry player. I think obviously there's been some talk about my defensive game and habits and stuff like that, but I think at the next level you can't get away with that stuff. So, I think at that next level it'll be a lot better. And this year, obviously, there was times where I, you know, didn't seem engaged in games, and I think it was just, you know, I don't know what it was, but I think going to the next level, you know, being a young guy, you could get scratched or, you know, whatever it is, get sent down. So I got to make sure I'm dialed in, and I think when I'm, you know, working towards something, I think I'm pretty motivated and I can make it happen.
So you made the significant jump from the CHL to the NCAA this season. The next jump is to the NHL. Are you ready to walk into an NHL locker room starting next season?
Yeah, for sure. I think I went to college to make that jump a little bit smoother, you know, being around older guys, playing against older guys, faster guys. I think that's what I wanted, and I think it has prepared me for that. And I think me being around smart hockey players and being around players who are like give and go type players, I think that's where I'll thrive in, and hopefully I can make that jump, and I'm confident in it.
So last one for me, might be the most important question you get asked. What was your go-to order at the Penn State Creamery?
I only went once, and I got the peachy Paterno, I think it was. Yeah, nice. Yeah, on my visit.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. I know how popular the Creamery is, so yeah. I had to ask.
Yeah.
Gavin McKenna, thank you so much for joining us on NHL Draft Class. Best of luck in the Combine, and best of luck at the NHL Draft.
Thank you.
Mike, it was great getting to sit down with Gavin for the first time. He's had such an up and down season, and one of the things that really stood out to me was the relationship he had with his grandfather, and he touched on it in the documentary for sure, but we got to talk to him a little bit more about it, and it's just, you know, the Indigenous, the First Nations background is such a huge basis for who he is and what he is, and I liked what he said that, you know, no matter what kind of nonsense is being said about me online or is being written about me, I can always go back to what my grandfather, the stories that I've heard from him, and like, this is nothing. This is a blink of an eye, and it's over and done with. What he went through, and he survived it, this is nothing.
Yeah, and it's funny, when I asked him that question about, you know, he could always, you know, go to his grandfather, maybe call him, and he says, well, Grandpa didn't have a cell phone, so he would call the family and talk to Grandpa, but he always had that way about him. He can go to Gramps, discuss what life was like, and he told us those stories. Some of those stories are just unbelievable, Adam. And that was off the ice, and we know what family means to Gavin McKenna. And on the ice, I just want to say, look, we've spoken to plenty of scouts. You know, McKenna made his WHL debut in 2022 as a 14-year-old, 14 years, 3 months. And every level that he's played in, and David Gregory of NHL Central Scouting, you know, says this all the time, he has played above what anyone expected. He's been always playing against older guys that were maybe bigger and stronger than him at a young age, and that was no different this year at Penn State. He did the same thing. Look, first year, and you would ask them about the first year, you know, how did things come together? And I thought he spoke very eloquently about that. And second half of the season after World Juniors, everything seemed to pop for him. He got that confidence that he needed to kind of drive himself towards the finish line. And he did just that. And that's why I think, and I think we both agree, Adam, that Gavin McKenna most likely, we think, will be the number one pick here.
And you can go back and listen to previous episodes of NHL Draft Class. We talked, you mentioned David Gregory. We talked to John Williams, who scouts in the Western League. We've talked to other scouts. There is a rare amount of unanimity in what's considered a very deep draft class that Gavin McKenna should be the number one pick. And you can go back and listen to those episodes and hear about more prospects. But we asked the scouts, and they said Gavin McKenna is the best player in this year's draft class. Now, whether you believe there is a chasm the size of the Grand Canyon between him and everyone else, or whether you think it's very narrow, the point still remains. Gavin McKenna is viewed as the number one player in this year's draft class.
And there's another player that could also go number one, or we think might go two or three as well, Ivar Stenberg from Frölunda, the left wing there. Another left wing. Two left wings. Who would have thought, right, Adam? In the draft, we have wingers that are at the top of a draft class, but Stenberg certainly proved himself. We saw him play at the World Championships, did an outstanding job there, on a line with Viggo Bjork, the centerman, who could also go in this draft in the top 10, and Lucas Raymond, who he said he looked up to and played a pivotal role in his development as he was growing up. So Ivar Stenberg is another player here that is certainly going to be looked at and maybe, you know, talked about as being, if not one, then definitely the number two pick.
Yeah, Mike, you're right. There is that outside chance that he is the number one pick. But let's go to that conversation we had with Ivar.
So, Ivar, you put up one of the finest SHL seasons ever for a draft-eligible player. When did you start to feel like your game was really taking off this season?
I would say at the beginning, when I got some good games and I was feeling pretty good and fast and stuff like that, it really took off, and I got some good teammates around me, so that was pretty easy to play.
Did you expect to play the entire season in SHL, or did you think maybe you'd spend time the U20 league?
I would say my plan was to be there the whole season, but I just wanted to play at the beginning, and then I just play more and more, and yeah, it was going better and better, so yeah, it was improving, and I think that was a big thing for me.
It's kind of incredible. You had that great performance at World Championships recently. What was that experience like for you, and can you maybe give us a player that was kind of fun to play with, you know, to be around in the locker room?
It was awesome. Like, to be around NHL guys and be with them every day was super fun and something I will remember for the rest of my life. Guys like Raymond, Ekman Larsson was like good guys, really funny, and yeah, especially Raymond, I play with him in the same line and we like grew up at the same team back in Sweden, so yeah, it was big for me.
When they called your name at the end of the tournament, that you were one of Sweden's best players at the tournament, were you surprised? What was your reaction when you heard your name called?
At that point, not too much. Just like you were disappointed, sad because you wanted more, and I think we all wanted more. So right then, I just didn't think so much, but. Yeah, after it, it's really fun and pretty big for me, so it was fun.
This year for you has been, everything's been going so fast for you. It's been a special season, but what kind of allowed you to stay poised and calm? Where does that come from?
I would say, like, just how I am as a guy outside. My family, my agents around me. Get me to stay calm and stay focused, and yeah, sometimes you need to put a hockey away and just focus on other stuff, and I think that's a big key for me this season, to do stuff you really think is fun and not just only hockey.
So the World Championship, you talked about it, playing with and against NHL guys. That give you an idea of how close you are to being NHL ready? Do you think you're ready to play in the league next season?
I think so. I think every day at the World Championship, I got more and more confident. And I can really see me play, but it's up to the teams.
Some scouts have mentioned your responsible defensive play. How important is that for you to be seen, you know, much more than just a scoring winger?
It's important, especially back home in Sweden. The Swedish league is pretty defensively. You cannot come up and just play offensive. Then you're not going to play. So I think it's important for me. And I think as a coach, you always can put me in all the situations, because I am good offensive and good defensive, so yeah, that's important.
Where do you still think you can get better in your game too, if you want to make the jump to the NHL next year, that you still need to do to get there?
That's pretty much like be faster and be smarter, shoot harder, like do pretty much small stuff that will make you better as a hockey player.
If center and defense are the prime positions on most draft boards, why do you think the Maple Leafs should make an exception to the rule?
I don't know. I would say maybe it's I can play a really good two-way game that you don't see too often, and I have good offensive skills and I'm good in D-zone, so I think that's a really rare combo nowadays, and that's something that's good.
So you come from a pretty big hockey family. Your older brother, Otto, plays for the Blues. Your younger brother also plays in Frölunda in the under-16 or under-18 group. How was it growing up with a bunch of hockey players? Dad played, your cousins play. How was it at home growing up with this huge hockey family around you?
Amazing. Couldn't ask for better. It was super fun, and we have always played so much hockey, and with my cousins, with my brothers, always competed, and yeah, it's been really much hockey, and yeah, we all love it, so it's been good.
So Otto told me it was always you and Knut against him. You guys teamed up to go after the older guy?
Exactly.
how were those battles growing up? Any holes in the basement walls or anything?
Yeah, we had a room in our house that we always played in, and it was always chaos in there, fights and everything. And then at the winter, we had a rink outside, So we have, yeah, we are playing together so much, and we've been fighting, and it's been crazy, but it's worth it because it's been so fun.
So between you, Otto, and Knut, who is the most annoying to compete against?
I would say a little brother, because when you lose to him, you hear it in 2 weeks.
Dad played pro. Did he coach you at all growing up?
He didn't play pro.
Oh, but didn't he play? I thought I read that he played hockey.
Yeah, but he played like Division 3.
Okay.
So really low, but he knows pretty much hockey.
So he coached you growing up. How was it with, if Dad coached you, how was it like with him as a coach, and were there arguments at the dinner table after games?
Yeah, sometimes, but it's been good. It's been hard and fair, and pushed me and be supportive and stuff like that. So it's been good, but yeah, it's been fun too.
Who are some of the players that you enjoy watching in the league today, Ivar?
NHL?
NHL, yeah.
I like McDavid, McKinnon. I really like Kucherov. The style he plays is pretty unique. And also like the Swedish Nylander and Raymond is fun to watch.
Have you thought about what it would be like in the NHL to play with Otto? I mean, he's knocking on the door in St. Louis. He's probably going to be there all next season. Have you guys thought about? I know I talked to Otto. He said you guys played together once or twice, a couple of games, maybe at the under 20 or under 18 league. But playing together in the NHL, what would that be like?
I don't know. Like such a dream. Like hard to explain if we play in the same NHL team. That would be so sick. So yeah, hard to find words on that.
Talk about what the World Junior Championship meant to you in January in Minnesota, and how you were able to use that tournament to kind of catapult yourself and gain even more confidence for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, that was a really good experience. Like first time I won something, so that was meaning a lot to me. Good tournament. I think I could play better, but really nice to end up as a gold medalist.
Where is the gold medal? Do you have it at home?
Yeah, at home. I have some medals there.
Is that right? That one goes right in the middle, center square?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious, you and yourself and Viggo Bjork are real good friends. What would be your case to other NHL clubs that Viggo could be the best centerman of this draft?
For sure. I think if you have played with Viggo, you really can see how good he is, how smart and good hockey player he is. So I really think he's up there, and I would take him as a first center.
Well, Ivar, thank you so much for joining us today on NHL Draft Class, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Great stuff there from Ivar Stenberg, Adam. The one NHL comparison that I've been getting that I think is some almost right there is Zach Parise for Ivar Stenberg. And if you're getting a player like Zach Parise, I think that's pretty good company to be in. And let's face it, everywhere he's played this year, whether it be the World Junior Championships, where we were very impressed with what he was able to do in that tournament and the numbers that he put up, helping Sweden to a gold medal. And then to, finish it off this season after a great year in Frölunda and what he was able to do against, older and bigger and stronger competition. And then at the World Championships, what he was able to do there with the numbers that he put up. So I think Ivar Stenberg is going to be right there when it comes to this draft class. And it's going to be interesting, as we've been saying, if McKenna goes one, Stenberg two. But there's also been talk about, this is a good defensive class too. So where are these defensemen going to fall? Very interesting this year.
Well, I think when you're voted one of the best three players of the team for a tournament, and it's a world championship, and you're a draft eligible guy, I think that tells you everything you need to know about Ivar Stenberg, his skill level, and what he was able to accomplish playing with and against older, more developed competition, even more so than what he did in the SHL this season. So that leads me to think that he's got a really good chance of being an excellent NHL player. But like you said, could he go two? Do we know who's going to pick two?
Yeah.
Will it stay the San Jose Sharks? Because you look at what they've built as far as young forwards, Celebrini, Smith, Misa, Raymond, the prospects they have coming, guys like Chernyshov, guys like Musty, guys like Haltonen. You know, there's only so many top six, top nine forward spots. Does, you know, is Stenberg, as great as he might be, it almost feels like it could be like a hat on a hat for the Sharks.
Yeah.
So do they take a defenseman or do they trade down? And whoever goes into that number two spot, what do they need? Who, you know, could they then take Stenberg? Or to your point, would they again look at a defenseman?
Very difficult to trade when you're drafting that high, right? Because a lot of fans want to see either that number one, number two pick chosen right there. So that's it's going to be a difficult call. But hey, if you're getting the proper assets in a trade like that of that significance, maybe you do it to move down and possibly get the defenseman that you want or the forward that you want. But again, it's just unusual to have two left wings as maybe the top two players in a draft. But in this case, we do. And it's just going to be interesting to see where these guys fall in this draft. That, to me, Adam, and I think you'd agree, is, you know, it's pretty fruitful with the number of players that could be playing in the NHL in 2 to 3 years.
Well, it's we've got 3 weeks of intrigue, right?
Yeah.
3 weeks of drama and 3 weeks of trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen when we're back here in Buffalo for the 2026 NHL draft on June 26th and 27th. It's going to be a fun ride.
It will be. We're looking forward to it.
Absolutely. But stay tuned here to NHL Draft Class. We will have all your information, talking to all the top prospects, all the best scouts. But for now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.